It's a blackout. Knock the lights out. I'm in the stands. Pull the mic out.
All right, we start hour number two telling you Capital Casino is now open again with their outdoor gaming venue at 411 North 16th Street in Sacramento. Lincoln Kennedy to join us here in just a moment. Later on this hour, we will have the crossover. Also, our KHDK Daily Over Under. We'll get some audio as well from Chris Weber that I thought you'd want to hear after. We played it last week, the stuff that when Doug was here, Doug and I, when we talked to C-Web. But now that the Hall of Fame weekend has come and gone, just his reactions to that. I think it's some good stuff that you will like coming up at the bottom of the hour. But updating you on a couple of the things that have happened today. Of course, A's baseball earlier today, an A's win. Giants still down late in their game, and we're getting ready for Giants football. Giants and the Washington football team coming up in Thursday Night Football. You'll be able to hear that here. Starting at 5. But each and every week, we told you we're going to talk to Chris Landry from LandryFootball.com, and Lincoln Kennedy is going to join us as well. We're so glad to have Lincoln with us right now, as Lincoln will join us each week. Lincoln's busy doing Pac-12 Network stuff, certainly the Raider stuff, and a former Raider and currently the broadcaster for the Raiders Radio Network. But Lincoln, got to start with Monday night. How wild was that game against the Ravens?
No doubt about it. But, you know, what an electric atmosphere. In all my years being around football, I never really experienced anything like that. The hype, obviously, over the stadium, Allegiant Stadium, first time having fans in. Actually, the first time they did it for the preseason game, but regular season game, having fans in. I mean, Gladys Knight sang the national anthem. We had Too Short and Ice Cube performing the halftime show. And look, as long as I've been in Oakland, I know Too Short is from Oakland, and Ice Cube has always been a Raiders fan. They've never performed that I know at the stadium. I've never, you know, known them to perform at the halftime show of the stadium. So it was an electric atmosphere. And then all the celebrities in the building, and to cap it all off, to have a game of that magnitude and that excitement level, there were enough heart attacks to go around.
I know we'll get into the game itself. I'm curious about that atmosphere, like you said, and I believe that it felt it. You could hear it through the radio. You could see it on TV. Long term, as we're looking, as this year goes on, as the years go forward for Las Vegas Raiders, a lot of people thought, oh, there's just going to be a lot of other people that come in to watch their team play the Raiders. What do you think it will be as a home field in years to come for the Raiders?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be a definitive advantage. You know, the nation has always traveled well. And right now, when you think about it, just on the surface, what's not to like about going to Vegas? I mean, think about it. You can cap off a weekend of hanging out in Vegas, which most people do already, by seeing a professional football game. And it doesn't even matter if you're a Raiders fan. Right now, Allegiant Stadium, and despite of what they did with as far as the requiring the vaccination requirements, it's still one of the hottest tickets in town. And you know, I think it's going to continue that way, especially if the Raiders continue winning. Now, I mean, that's a lot to be expected. But at the same point, just think about this. Even if you're not a Raiders fan and you want to go to an atmosphere, it was electric. I mean, it really was throughout that building and throughout that night. So I just think for years to come, it's going to be fun, and it's really going to be something to see. And to me, I think it's going to be a definite home field advantage.
Well, as far as the game goes, we'll get to the drama at the end. Early on, hearing you, hearing Brent, watching the telecast as well, man, Derek Carr, it was rough. He just had a brutal first quarter. Felt like he locked in a lot on Waller, which, understandably, why not? He's your best offensive weapon for Carr. But what did you attribute the slow start to the offense? Line, Carr's reads, the Ravens' defense? Where does the most of the blame start for the slow start offensively?
I'm one of these guys that thinks everybody needs a preseason. And I might be in a minority these days. I understand why Gruden didn't do it, but there's something to be said having gone through it. There's the energy, the game day energy feel, and just the whole timing factor. A lot of those throws. Now, overall, Derek Carr tried to, you know, it's a little side note, Derek Carr tried to hit Darren Waller 19 times. He connected with him 10 times. And yes, he was trying to force the ball to him. I think everyone could agree on that. But, you know, a lot of those things that were incompletes were timing. And just overall understanding. For example, Henry Ruggs ran a route against his zone coverage, and he thought it was man coverage, and Derek, you know, knew it was zone, recognized it. Those are the timing things that you need to work out in the game, because you never know what somebody's going to throw against you. You can script it in practice, but it's not the same thing. And so that's why I think everyone needs just a little preseason. Besides that, getting used to the energy, you know, controlling your feelings and your emotion, because I've always felt that football is a controlled violence. You play it between the whistles. And between those whistles, you have so much adrenaline rushing through your body. Depending on your responsibility and the circumstances behind it, sometimes you need to understand that timing. You can't get that without having a game situation. So I attribute the slow start for Derek just getting into the game and having to pass as many times as he had to because they had no running game.
Well, as the game went along, the good news for him, good news for the Raiders, Lincoln, they got better. Line protection was better. It felt like they understood the blitzing scheme by the Ravens. Certainly the defense got better. What did you see as those adjustments went along? Why did the Raiders get better, really, on both sides in the second half in OT?
Well, I think things settled down. And look, for what it's worth, Derek Carr is still a pretty good game manager. The fact that when they found themselves down 14 to nothing, I thought it was going to be a blowout. And I think a lot of people probably shared the same opinion. But as the game went on, especially in the second quarter, they kind of got into a rhythm, as you mentioned, in a groove. And I think one of the best telling signs was that they were able, you know, with the last seconds of the half, go down and get a field goal. I thought that was a big for them, a big momentum game for them. Even though the Ravens were getting the ball to start the second half, I thought defense was starting to find its groove as it did, and slowing down Lamar Jackson and what he was trying to do. And offensively, they were starting to get things going. But for what it's worth, you know, as you mentioned, the offensive line settled down. They made Leatherwood particularly made a couple big mistakes, and so did Andre James at center, a few mistakes early, but they didn't count hurt him as bad. But they did settle down, and they got into a rhythm and a groove. It's just going forward, I don't think that you can pass the ball, 59 times?
Yeah.
And or go back to drop back to passing him, something like that, 56, 59 times, including the sacks, and think that you're going to be successful. It just doesn't work over time, in my opinion.
Yeah, we're talking with Lincoln Kennedy here. We'll do it each and every week. You mentioned Alex Leatherwood. He's the top pick, right tackle. Made some mistakes, but you'd be the perfect one to evaluate him. What did you see from the rookie?
Well, you know what? He's got to understand his responsibilities. And Gruden's offense, 96% of the time, you've got the end, unless you're told otherwise. And the center, Andre James, and of course everyone else is going to communicate it. But there were some errors that, you know, he made with his footwork that I think he'll get used to. And he's got to understand guys like Pernell McPhee, who he's going up against, as well as Justin Houston, are older guys that prefer to bull rush, they're power guys. And you have to understand, and he'll get that. He'll understand the more film study he does, the more longer he's in the league. He'll understand the difference between guys. But he anticipates a lot of people to try to speed rush him, and there's a lot of guys who are going to try to go through him. So that's what hurt him in the early part. He settled down and got his legs under him and kept pretty good control of his feet. I thought he finished better than he started.
Lincoln, how do you think what impact did it have not having Richie Incognito last week and then going forward now knowing that Denzel Good will be out?
Well, see, I mean, that's again another thing where, you know, people sit there and argue against the preseason. Well, I'm telling you, you know, here's the thing. It's going to be hard because John Simpson held his own, and I was really impressed with the way he played at left guard. But going forward, now they're thin. And if you tell me that you can justify – you know, not conditioning people's bodies, because that's what I think football is. In order to be good at football, you have to play football. And you have to play football at a high level to be ready for a high level. You know, the Raiders lost two guys in game one. One, Gerald McCoy did play in preseason. And it's just unfortunate for him because he's a long road back, coming back from the injury they had last year, that he's out from now on this year too. But Denzel Good didn't play the preseason, and he didn't finish the game. He tried to come back after he hurt himself, but he couldn't. He couldn't finish the game. So going forward, you know, Luminor and John Simpson are going to be the guys, and they just brought up Lester Cotton, who I thought played pretty well in the preseason when from the practice squad, as well as signing a former guy from Seattle off of their practice squad, Simmons. So three of those guys have got starting experience. Albeit limited. Luminor, the right guard, is probably going to have the most, he definitely has the most out of the group. But they've got to get Incognito back. They really have to.
Yeah. I was thinking about you at the end of the game when the Raiders had that, you know, three game tying drives. They force overtime. They get the ball. You want to go down and have a great drive. And I love that overtime drive, just moving it. And then they get themselves in position after just that. I mean, I could not believe the hard count down at the goal line. Why even run that, Lincoln, from the half yard line like that?
I don't get it either. But I will say the Ravens did something that's incredibly smart. They stemmed on the one that Leatherwood jumped off sides, and that's a great call because again, you got to cool your emotions, and a lot of time in that situation, you know, you got a lot of adrenaline rushing, and the slightest movement out of the corner of your eye will make you flinch. I've had it happen to me many a times. So that was a very good lesson for Alex to learn. But you know what? It's when you overthink things. And Derek Carr has had free run of this offense. He has the check with me system built in. But at the same point, there's a lot of times where Derek wants to change it at the line, make adjustments, and do other things. When I'm sitting up in the booth, like, just run the damn play.
Right.
Don't overthink things. Just run. You've got people on the sideline who are coached or coaches who know what the hell they're doing, what they're calling, what they're looking for. Don't overthink things. And sometimes I think it gets them in trouble. But I just thought it was silly for him to do it. More importantly, it was sloppy. I told Brent after the game, I thought the game was sloppy in many ways, and this is why I say everybody needs preseason.
Yep.
Because to me, the instance where you get the ball back after a big turnover, and you're going to run one play and then kick the field goal, why the hell is the holder not in place? Why? Mm-hmm. Where the hell is AJ Cole? Why do you have to get a delay of game on that? You see what I'm saying? Because you used your timeout before when you got down in the goal line, you missed with the quarterback sneak, but you got down the goal line. You have a backup play. Why did it take so long? Why did you have to use your second timeout? You see what I'm saying? It was sloppiness like that you expect more out of professionals. You know, it's the equivalent of a point guard not being able to make a free throw. What the hell are you doing? It doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? So there were instances like that throughout the game, the sloppiness and stuff like that. I thought a lot of emotions, obviously, with it being the game and the magnitude of being Monday night. I just wish they looked better prepared at certain situations and not so unprofessional, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was a bad look there, and even to have the moment where you think the ecstasy, the celebration, you're basically out there exchanging jerseys because you think you've just walked this one off, and then wait, goal line, okay, we'll score here, and then you don't, and then it's, oh, this one's going to be an awful loss. But fortunately, it wasn't. It was a great win for the Raiders, and now they go to Pittsburgh, another good team that I think had a really good win week one. I don't really know what to expect for Pittsburgh this year, Lincoln, but their defense is always going to be good. They played well in Buffalo. What about the challenges this week at Pittsburgh?
Well, there's going to be a number of challenges because what Buffalo made the egregious error is they underestimated T.J. Watt. There was a lot of times where they went empty backfield out of a deep shotgun set and a spread formation. And they have they already have wide studs between their offensive – I mean, not studs, wide splits between their offensive line. And Pittsburgh plays a wide 4-3. But more importantly, you're asking your offensive tackle to be able to keep up with T.J. Watt, who runs faster forward than any tackle in the world runs backward. So it was really unfortunate. It was sloppy on Buffalo's part, underestimating him. And he was a difference maker. All in all, this defense is tenacious. It's much like – and it's very physical, much like the Ravens. You know, Henry Ruggs III and Brian Edwards got their first dose of a very physical defense against Baltimore, and so did Darren Waller. All the receivers got a dose of very hands-on secondary. That's going to happen the same against Pittsburgh. So the problem ultimately for the Raiders becomes this, and I'll talk about it more on the Silver and Black Show later on this week. But the problem becomes is if you're going to have to go max protection. In the past, they've kept Darren Waller in and a back end to help. You know, back goes one way, Darren Waller goes the other one to go max protection. But if you take Darren Waller out of the passing scenario. So they're going to have to play a lot of two tight ends, in my opinion. They're going to probably have to bring in Foster Moreau to be that extra blocker so they can go max protection. Because you're going to have to give Alex Leatherwood help, especially over with Watt. And you're going to have to secure the interior because Cameron Hayward is a very big force to try to deal with. On the inside with limited guards with experience.
How do they keep him off balance too? I know you mentioned, Lincoln, about the unbalanced pass to run last game, and part of it was the Raiders were trailing a lot of the second half. But even when the Raiders did run, you know, the 20 or so times, really no explosive runs. The best one was the gadget with Mariota. So how do you get Jacobs and Drake and that ground game going?
You just have to block it. You just have to call it and run it. The fact is that Jacobs was hurt after pregame. I mean, or the first run. He came off limping. You know what I mean? So that doesn't do you any good. And from what I've heard, Cameron Drake has been slightly beat up or not full speed either. So right now, the backfield is hurting just as much as the offensive line is hurting, which, again, I think that's why you need preseason. You got to get guys hit. They got to get hit. You know what I mean? You can't just protect everybody. But, I mean, that's water under the bridge. We'll discuss that ad nauseum later. But the truth is that, you know, right now the running game is going to be struggling because – you know, their healthiest running back is Regis, Trey Regis. And this other guy, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, they signed at the closing of camp. I don't know how many snaps he's got in the backfield, but the run game is going to hurt. And you have to have that balance against a Pittsburgh defense, if nothing else, just to win the time of possession. You can't afford to go in there. I know we did it 1 year, but it's a different team and it's a different time. You can't go in there and throw, you know, 59, 60 times a game.
Yeah, I know. We know you've said it before, your thoughts on kickers, but I will say special teams, I thought Cole punted really well, flip field position several times. And then Carlson, yeah, I know there was the snafu in overtime, but he hits the, what, 55-yarder to force OT and hit both of his. Yeah. I thought special teams was good.
Well, special teams has got to be good, and it's something that we've been looking for. You know, when A.J. Cole did play in the preseason game in San Francisco, he didn't punt very well. You know, so I was glad to see that he was able to turn it around. And, yes, he was booming. But all three phases, when you look at this month of games for the Raiders, the first four games, all three phases are going to have to be in unison and play well if they're going to win, because they are playing physical teams across the board, and there are no gimmies. You know what Miami's defense can promote. Their offense is starting to find a way. You know what Chicago can do with their defense. And the same thing, you know, goes with the Pittsburgh Steelers. This trip, short week, extended, you know, injury list that I see. And then on top of that, they got to play at 10 a.m. So it's a tough one.
Yeah. Lincoln, you're a busy man this time of year. I know you got college football as well. Pac-12 this weekend. Minnesota, yeah. Colorado. Colorado, yeah. Man, I thought they had it last week against A&M.
I know, huh?
What about your matchup this weekend there?
Well, you know what? You know how Minnesota likes to run the ball, and Colorado, you know, with their quarterback, has been playing pretty well. He's definitely the difference maker for them offensively, but they've got to get in a rhythm. Talking about the Buffaloes, they've got to get in a rhythm where they can put points on the board. They can move the ball at times, but they just can't sustain drives, and I think that's really what hurt them last week. On defensive side for the Buffaloes, they showed some different defensive looks that left Texas A&M kind of stunned. So talking with the Minnesota coaches the other day, they were mentioning how the defense kind of threw people off, and Texas A&M didn't have an immediate answer for it, but they found a way to win. I think Colorado's a team on the rise. They might not be there this year, but they're definitely a team on the rise. And this is good for the Pac-12 network as well, because it's an early game. It's 10 a.m. Pacific time, which allows you to compete with some of the other Midwest games and Eastern games that start at noon. And then you also get a favorable matchup with Minnesota going into CU. So I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, last thing for you on that, sticking with the Pac-12. Who do you think SC will hire?
That's a good one. You know, when you're a program like SC, I think it's time for them to make a splash with a hire. I just don't know who's available to do that. You know, some people threw out Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah.
Love the guy because he's a Southern California guy. But here's the thing, and trust me, I know EB well, I'm a friend of his. I have nothing against him. But there's something to be said when you interview as many pro jobs as he's interviewed and you don't get hired. Mm. You know what I mean? There's something about that. And I don't know what it is. I wasn't privy into those meetings or anything like that. But I'm just saying that there's something that leads me to be that. Besides, college is a very different tool than pro. I mean, you've got to be able to recruit. And SC is one of those programs that you've got to have someone who's charismatic, forward-thinking, and can go into people's houses and say, hey, I want your son to come to SC and play football. And I don't know who's available out there to do that, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes a big splash name-wise, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do as they play out this year. Lincoln, I know it's off to a wild start for the Raiders. We enjoyed hearing you on Monday. We look forward to hearing you this Sunday as well. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you again next week.
I appreciate it. Thanks, man. We'll talk soon.
Lincoln Kennedy joining us here, as he will each and every week. I thought he gave some really good insight there on a couple of things on Carr's experience, and probably should have known better on some of those situations, especially down near the goal line. Just no need to get cute. No need to get fancy. Run the ball. Get it in there. Win the game. Now, in the end, they found a way to win the game. It was a wild journey, but it would have been one of the all-time worst losses had they lost that game.
What's great is that mistake by him probably saved a bunch of fantasy football players' nights.
Because what? He got another touchdown?
He was able to get another touchdown, more yards.
Yeah.
Was able to get a fumble on Lamar Jackson.
I didn't see – well, the Raiders were the underdog anyway, so they won. But I didn't know if that helped the over-under at all. I didn't see that. But, yeah, I mean, because you could have had just a field goal to win it. Instead, six more points with a touchdown. I thought that was interesting too, Chris, of all the years that Lincoln played in Oakland, covered the team in Oakland, he said that atmosphere was as good as anything he's seen. Plus, it's the first time in a building. It's Vegas. They're known for putting on a show. The atmosphere looked great, but he said that was one of the greatest things he's ever seen.
Also has a roof.
Keeps it quiet. Keeps the noise in. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. That was weird.
Shots fired at Oakland.
I know. Especially to have Too Short perform. That was weird. It's like bringing some of the Bay with them.
But we can all appreciate that it's still better than L.A.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. Arthur here says, I expect the Raiders to have low-scoring games this season. They might have to come from behind. They might have to be a come-from-behind team. If the scores stay low, they have a chance to win. Plus, it's actually an improvement from a year ago. Yeah, I mean, the Raiders, I don't know that I trust their defense yet. It got better as the game went along. I think there were certainly some bright spots there. I think Carr is still the strength. I think Waller is a matchup problem for opposing teams. And that's why Lincoln brought that up, too. I was really curious about that. I mean, 10 catches. He was great. But 19 targets, I just felt they got locked in there far too many times. And I think that hurt some of the early rhythm of the offense. I mean, Carr's first quarter, I want to say he was, I can't remember the official stats, but it was something like 2 of 10. And just subpar. But he got better as the game went on, as did the team. And a 1-0 start. I think this week will be tough with Pittsburgh. And the knowledge there that Lincoln talked about, Max Protect, maybe having two tight ends multiple times or extra people to really check a guy like T.J. Watt, the amount of pressure that Pittsburgh brings. They did a good job on Josh Allen and the Bills last week. That's a team that's historically been an aggressive defense. That's been their M.O. And how can Carr handle that? How quickly can he make a read of what the defense is trying to do to him? And then the other part is, can they establish anything on the ground? Just enough. I think the Raiders can be a good run team. They've got the personnel in the backfield. The tandem of Drake and Jacobs can really be a nice addition for this team. John Gruden has done multiple tight ends before, or fullback. Like he'll do the max protect if he needs to, but then it's what is the protection called by Pittsburgh in the areas that might leave them vulnerable? I'm sure they're going to lead towards doubling towards Waller. So it's one of those situations, like if you're going to beat us with someone else, not your best player. That's where a lot of the scheme and game planning and that kind of stuff gets fun. So Pittsburgh and the Raiders coming up on Sunday, and you'll be able to hear that too right here on Sports 1140 KHK. But I am excited to talk to Lincoln each and every week as someone that's been on the station for years, someone that's got so much experience, really loves the Raiders. But I like to hear him too on the call. I mean, he was getting so frustrated Monday night listening to the radio broadcast with him and Brent Musburger just on the foolishness that we would see from the Raiders.
You always know how Lincoln feels.
Yes.
About the Raiders.
Yes. And he wants them to win. And I don't know that anybody would ever call him a homer. He wants them to win. But if they're performing poorly, or if there is a silly flag or a bad read or a timeout when they shouldn't have taken it, either it's an audible, ugh. Like, you'll hear that, or like, I don't get what they're doing here. And he'll say it, which is pretty cool.
Run the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Just run the ball. You're 1 yard out. Run the ball. Don't get cute. They got cute. And it nearly backfired. It certainly nearly backfired on the Raiders. Time to see the return of Pro Rodeo to Marysville this Saturday and Sunday. For ticket information, go to MarysvilleStampede.com. All right, we're trying to see if the Giants can stay alive. They're down 7-4 in the ninth to the Padres. We'll update you on that when we come back. We still have the crossover. We still have our daily over-under as we get you ready for Thursday night football between Washington and the Giants. When we come back, though, we want you to hear some audio from Chris Webber, C-Web, and really Sacramento was a showcase this last weekend at Hall of Fame weekend, and with Yolanda Griffith, Rick Adelman, Chris Webber all going in. But C-Web reacted to his weekend. You'll hear some of that audio from the Dan Patrick Show. We'll let you hear that when we come back here on Sports 1140 KHDK. Believe me, just watch. Back here on Sports 1140 KHDK, thanks again to Lincoln Kennedy for joining us in our last segment. You'll get to check out Lincoln each and every week right here on Sports 1140. Football coming up at the top of the hour Thursday night, week two. They've just wrapped up in San Francisco. The Padres have won this one. They defeated the Giants. 7-4 was the final. So the Padres lost the first two, or the Giants got the first two. Then the Padres win the back two of that four-game set. 7-4 the final. as San Francisco loses this one. Next up for the Giants, they've got Atlanta for three, three with San Diego, three with Colorado, three with Arizona, and they finish with three more with San Diego. So six more games with the Padres. The loss by the Giants today creeps the Dodgers a little bit closer. Dodgers do not play today. So when they head into the Friday series, the standings will have the Dodgers just one back of the Giants. And again, here's my one biggest question that I've had about the San Francisco Giants. Love what they've done. Love their team. Proud of their record. They should be so excited for all of this. My question would be, if they don't get the division, and really, either way, let's take either side of this argument, of this conversation. But the bigger question is, if they don't win the division and they're in the one-game wild card, who are they pitching? Who's the guy they're going to throw on the mound in the game that they have to win? And the same question really could be asked if they win the division. Who's your game one? Who's your tone setter that not only is game one, but likely an important game five or game seven in a series later that you pitch multiple times? And I would have said All-Star break and a little bit after, it's Gausman for sure. He lost today, and he's still good season stats, much like everybody on the team. But I think he went five or six innings today, gave up a bunch of hits and runs to the Padres. Is it Desclafani, Alex Wood, Logan Webb, Cueto? It's so much better for a team when you know you've got that guy. You've got a dude that you know, like, hey, likely going to get us five innings, may get us through five innings without much damage. We'll wait on our offense because we're going against another stud. And then if they can extend that into six or seven innings and you get to our bullpen, that's our roadmap. That's how we win. And Gausman, Desclafani, Wood, Webb, and Cueto are all more than capable of doing that. It's just, who would you pick? Who's the one?
So you threw a couple names out there. So what would you rather have, a dude or a stud?
A dude.
Okay. Where does bro fit in there?
Oh, bro's third.
Okay.
Yeah.
So dude, stud, bro.
Bro may not even be there.
Wow. Yeah. So you want your guy.
Oh, yeah, my guy. So let's see. I might go dude, stud, your guy. Is there another one?
Pal. Nah. But that's not, yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
Eh. The man. Bro's not there.
Bro isn't there. Okay.
Nope. I don't want bro on my roster.
Can I tell you, I think I know exactly why the Giants lost today.
Why is that?
They want the Padres to get that final wild card spot because they know that the Padres have a chance to beat the Dodgers.
What if the Padres have to play the Giants? The Giants still play them six more times.
I think that they got the series. I think they need to play it close. I really want to see the Padres get the wild card spot and beat the Dodgers.
That would be fantastic. That would be. I mean, I think it would be torturous to the Dodgers or the Giants if they got in that one-game wild card and lost after winning 100-plus games. But
and we were just joking how many games back the Padres were.
I know. And in the end, I think as of now, I know with winning those two games, let me check the latest, but the Cardinals, I think, were the last team still in that wild card spot in the National League, the second one, right? The Dodgers have. Yeah, still the Cardinals. Padres just a half back. Cardinals have won five in a row. They were dead a couple weeks ago, just completely out of it. And they got hot at the right time. The Reds and others have just left it open for them. And that's still open. Mets, Phillies, Reds, Padres, Cardinals, Dodgers. Oh, by the way, speaking of the Mets, you were watching the Mets 30 for 30.
Yes.
It's been the last two nights, right? Is it? It's done?
Yeah.
How great. I was in there with you for 5 minutes, and the 5 minutes, 3 minutes I watched was fantastic. How good was the overall 30 for 30?
That's the entire thing. And 30 for 30 does such a good job of explaining like the time that everything is happening. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because you hear how good these players were. I was, I don't know, one when all of this was happening. And I see Doc Gooden pitching and I'm like, that's Pedro before mm-hmm. Pedro.
Yes.
It's like, this is insane. And it's crazy how great of a team they had. And it just blew up.
Yeah. And just even the little bit I saw with you, the personalities, Keith Hernandez, what he allegedly said to Jesse Orosco in that extra inning game with Houston, the party on the plane and how everybody didn't want to talk about it. Oh, no, I'm not talking about that. And just the stuff they said happened on there, you go, okay, it may not be 100% true, but there's shreds of truth in there, and you're going, what was going on that plane?
Oh, man, it's fantastic. That's all I could say. Like, okay. Even if you're not a sports fan,
oh, no, this is good.
You have to watch it.
Yeah. I'm going to have to.
I'm interested. What would be like another team that you could think of that could be like where you could do like a 30 for 30 like that?
I wouldn't have thought of that team, though, too, which is good. I'm glad they did it.
It's funny is when you hear about the 86 World Series, it's never about the Mets. It's always how the Red Sox blew the series.
Buckner and everything, yeah.
That's all you hear about.
I mean, a lot of things fit with New York and that time.
Yeah.
But the other part, just what was alleged of happened on that plane, I'm thinking, could that happen now?
No.
Yeah, there's no way, right? Of what was said that happened on that plane.
No.
Yeah. Wow, I'm gonna have to check that out. I'm glad it was like four parts or two hours each or something.
Four 1-hour parts.
All right, that was a really good job. So I'm gonna have to check the part that I had seen was got me hooked. So I'm definitely gonna have to check that out. All right, this last weekend we told you about the Basketball Hall of Fame. I hope you guys had a chance to see that too. I thought everybody's speeches were great. Certainly the ones that I cared most about. I thought Yolanda was awesome. Rick Adelman. Funny and awesome, and then C-Web just kind of went deep as you'd expect and brought it all home. He was great. Chris Webber truly was phenomenal to watch and delivered a great night. And so now, aftermath, and by the way, I mentioned that Doug Christie was in here earlier. He's going to be a part of our Celebrity Pick 6 this week that you'll be there to see on our KHDK platforms. I'm so glad Doug went. I talked to him a little bit about that. He said it was just, for him, it was awesome. I mean, the moment to see a teammate and a coach go in, but the fact that so many people were back there. Elston Turner, John Wetzel, of course, Weber, Vlade, Peja, Bobby, Doug, Jay Will, amongst others, just to see all that. And then Doug said, oh, yeah, and then by the way, here's Jordan, here's George Gervin, here's Bill Russell. I mean, to be around that atmosphere of basketball legends was so great for him, and he really, really enjoyed it. But Chris Webber was on the Dan Patrick Show and was asked about several things, including his favorite moment of the Hall of Fame weekend.
My father put my jacket on me. That was just special. I really enjoyed it because my family were an outgoing bunch. I had a bunch of brothers and sisters. And so everybody was like, move out the way. This is my weekend. And that's kind of how families are. And I needed that. And so it was their enjoyment of my father putting the coat on me.
Yeah, I know Chris has been really close to his family before and continues to be, and it just looked like everybody was touched. It's a moment for Chris, but it's really a moment for that whole journey, and it's not just Chris that gets there, and you could just tell that in everybody's speech. The person that motivated them, that pushed them, that doubted them, that supported them, a lot of times it's family, it's a high school coach, it's a teammate, it's a teacher, it's an uncle, it's an aunt. You just don't know who it is, and everybody's journey had some sort of common thread in that. And I think that was really telling, I thought, of all the speeches that night. But Chris Webber, to be able to have his dad put the jacket on, you could tell it meant a lot to him. And that was awesome. That was awesome. Here's Chris also asked about what is next for him.
When I grow up,
yeah.
Hopefully I'll have these two twins take care of me. Daddy's getting tired, but I look forward to continuing to do all the things we're doing in business. I'm really excited about it. And hopefully I will afford the opportunity to come back to basketball in a different position, and hopefully one that, you know, can impact the team in the city and still try to win the championship.
Yeah, Chris has always thought about and has done business, certainly has done business in our area. And as he told us when he was on with Doug and I several months back, ownership. He wants to be in a front office. He wants to have, or a GM or some sort of spot of control and business acumen, and he knows all the different entities there that I thought he explained so well when he talked to us about how to recruit players and people to join your organization, the right people from top to bottom, from coaches to front office. I could just see Chris Webber being the one that oversees all that and really wants to do that. And so he was asked about becoming part of an ownership group.
Well, you know, I've taken two shots and we missed both. One, you know, almost did the Kawhi, except it bounced off the seventh bounce. But hopefully, you know, we're gonna keep trying, man. You know, we're gonna keep trying, definitely.
I think the other part about Chris, and I think we said this last week when we were talking about the best moment for Chris Webber. A lot of Chris Webber's moments to me have been defined about things that didn't go right. You go to college in the timeout. They were wildly successful, wildly entertaining, transformed the game, changed a culture, an image, and just five freshmen. You can't play five freshmen. Yeah, you can when you're the Fab Five and you're that good and brash and cocky and you support the talent and you back it up and you get to the finals twice. But a lot of people remember the timeout. I remember the timeout. I remember them losing twice in the finals. But I also remember the positives. But a lot of the time, it seems like that group was defined by that. And then Chris, after Michigan, what really went on there? Why are they canceling these wins? Why is he not really considered part of this stuff that we all saw? And then you think about his NBA career, rookie of the year at the Warriors, and then kind of gets into it with Don Nelson. They move on from him, has some troubles in D.C., comes here, doesn't want to come here, which he became very public about, and then thrives and has his best years of his career right here in Sacramento. But they fall short. He tears his knee. His career's not the same after that. But it's all of that doesn't matter because he's a Hall of Famer. But I think about a lot of those things of coming up short or tough times for Chris Webber, and I think that even reflected in his speech about you got to be there. You got to be there through the journey. It's not you want to win a championship, but it's about all of that, going through the struggles, having the success. It all defines you. And I think Chris has really had good perspective, and I think he's learned from a lot of that stuff. I really do. And having to go through that, and he hasn't backed off talking about it and answering questions and wearing it and living with it, and he's been pretty good about that. One more thing on Webb from the Dan Patrick Show. He was asked about Allen Iverson and Jay Will. I know in his speech he talked about AI being the best player he ever played with, but about those guys playing football, remember AI was a pretty good football player too, about those guys being quarterbacks.
He really serious about it. I mean, it's almost like a regret with him that he didn't get to play football, but I've seen him and Jason Williams throw a football with other football players and that type of thing. And I can only imagine AI with how he moved. Mike Vick looked up to AI, so that would be, you know, pretty cool.
Yeah, I think a lot of players have some high respect level for Allen Iverson and certainly for Jay Will. I'm glad that group got recognized, really, with Adelman and Chris Webber, and then the rest of the group could be there. I'm so glad Doug went and Vlade, of course, Page, and as we said, assistants and Wetzel and Elston Turner and so on and so forth. To have all those guys around together had to feel great for them. It felt like a huge moment for our city. And just the shout-outs that you heard during some of the speeches, great to hear about Pete Youngman getting some love there, Erica Bjork, who's been in this community a long time. It was really, really cool, besides all the names that you would expect to hear. Sign Lady. I mean, it was awesome. It was a really good weekend, I think, for Sacramento, and I'm glad it was all well, well-deserved for all of them. All right, break time for us. Still to come, top of the hour, Thursday night football, week two, Giants and the Washington football team. We'll give you our crossover, the KHDK Daily Over-Under, and more to get to in our final segment as we continue right here on Sports 1140 KHDK.
The Jim Rome Show.
USC fired head football coach Clay Helton 2 days after number 14 USC got hammered at home by Stanford 42-28. Firing a coach after getting blown out in week two is not a sign that that coach made a mistake. It's a sign that everybody else made a mistake. Very good guy, very average head coach, and you already knew that. It should have never come to this.
The Jim Rome Show. Weekdays from 9 to noon on Sports 1140 KHDK.
Hey there, Jason Ross here. Let me tell you about West Coast Mortgage Group. That's who we worked with. That's who you should work with. We did a refi with them over there, called and talked to Rob at 916-453-7533. And when we were talking to them, again, asking questions, I said, nah, I don't really think that we have to do a new mortgage. I'm happy. We've been in our house a long time. We've got a good mortgage. We've been paying it down, and it's working its way down. And I said, yeah, but your rate is okay. I can get you a much better rate. Don't you want a better rate? Yeah, but then there's all that paperwork and all that stuff you have to sign. We're happy. Then when we went through the numbers and really crunched them and looked at new terms and, oh, yeah, okay, this makes too much sense. Let's do it. So we did it. We refied. We are so happy. And that's, again, what I'm encouraging you to do. Take advantage of their knowledge. Take advantage of the great rates and do that refi at 916-453-7533 with the folks at West Coast Mortgage Group. Or some of you are looking for that first home. Don't give up. It's tough to get in there right now. We'll call them and ask them about their buyer-ready pre-approval program. They know their stuff. They know the business. They know this area. It's West Coast Mortgage Group. Give them a call at 916-453-7533. All right, final segment here of the show. Again, time to see the return of Pro Rodeo to Marysville this Saturday and Sunday. For ticket information, go to MarysvilleStampede.com. In a few moments, Thursday Night Football, Giants, the Washington football team. You can participate right now on our KHTK.com. Daily over-under. Passing yards for Daniel Jones, 275.5. Does he go over? Does he go under? Last week, he has 260-something, so he would have been under. Vote on that. Your opportunity to win a $50 gift card to Twin Peaks. All you have to do is participate. It's that simple. One other thing, Chris, we were talking earlier about the Giants and Dodgers and, you know, the wild card situation. The other thing that could happen is someone sent in the text on this is if they tie, they play game 163 on Monday to see who wins the division. The loser's the wild card. I mean, man.
No, I'm all for that.
Yeah, that would be brutal to have that one game situation where the winner is winning the division. The loser has to play then, what, a day or two later in the wild card in a one game situation. So, only separated now by one game heading into the weekend of action, starting the weekend series tomorrow. All right, we're getting to football in a moment. Let's get the crossover from the morning show.
What's happening on the Carmichael Dave Show? Let's find out right now with the crossover.
Do you believe it?
Here's today's crossover.
Jason, hope you had a great show today. Crossover question, of course, right here on Sports 1140 KHTK, and I'd imagine just a few minutes. We've got the Washington football team and the New York Giants in a battle of just really bad football teams. But my question for you is this. 5 years from now, what are we going to be saying about Daniel Jones? Will we be talking about him as a good quarterback, a top-tier quarterback? Or 5 years from now, is Daniel Jones still always going to be remembered as the guy who broke loose for a touchdown? Nobody to beat, and he fell all over himself. Have a good rest of your show.
I think, Jay, he is going to be middle of the tier, 5 years from now, middle of the pack quarterback on his second team.
Who also fell at the 20-yard line.
Yeah, but he might have another moment in between there that's even more memorable than that. That one's pretty good, though. That one was an all-timer for him. He can change that. The best chance is, I don't know what New Yorkers feel about him, but if I had to guess, they're not too thrilled. Probably not too patient with much of anything there. And I don't know that we've seen like these huge flashes of brilliance. Again, I feel like he's right in the middle. Nothing, he's not bad, but there's a lot of quarterbacks better than him, and they got to find him.
He's better than other quarterbacks.
Some, but not all of them.
And not all of them.
There's quite a few that are better than him. But don't you think he's writing 32 starters? I bet he's 16 to 20.
He's my quarterback on the bench behind Patrick Mahomes.
Like three guys behind the bench.
No, on my fantasy football team.
Oh, okay.
He's my, Patrick Mahomes is off this week. I got to throw somebody in
one
there.
Week, you're playing him, unless Mahomes gets hurt. If he doesn't get hurt.
Watch your mouth.
You're playing Mahomes every week, and then Daniel Jones, you can just cut him after the one bye week for the Chiefs. That's it. You won't need him. All right, that's it for us. We do have Thursday Night Football coming your way next. It is Washington and the Giants. We're back tomorrow, 3 to 6, full show. Kyle Draper will be in as our guest co-host tomorrow. We look forward to that. Have a good rest of your night right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. See ya.